Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. They were formerly Team Power. You might recognize that name. They've been around for a long time. They sold to Pape and became bigger and better. So go by and see them if you're looking for tractors, lawn equipment, and they're also a Honda dealer. They handle the Honda generators. So us here in California all need generators now. So
yes, we seem to.
Yep, come by and see them, and they've got a full line of generators to choose from. And their phone number is 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Bonus.
Yeah.
Look at that. Went off like he planned it. And don't wait till the power goes out before you get your generator, because things get a little squirrely then.
Yeah.
Our guest today is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. He's the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security and Director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. Both are congressional advisory boards, and he's served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission. Darn it, I was doing so well. And the House Armed Services Committee, along with the CIA. He's the author of Apocalypse Unknown, The Struggle to Protect America from Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe, and something we've experienced here in California, just in small version, Electric Armageddon. So we're discussing grid issues and how California is very much the example
there
of what you could be doing if you don't live in California. The article we've posted today at WeThePeopleRadio.us is California Wildfires, Object Lesson for National Grid Security. And Dr. Pry co-authored that with some super smart guys, Dr. William Graham, who served as the chairman of the Congressional EMP Commission. He was President Reagan's science advisor. He ran the NSA, and he was on the defense science team that discovered the EMP phenomenon and developed protective measures. Also, Ambassador James Woolsey, director of the Central Intelligence Agency. So, had some smart folks work on this article. And, you know, Dr. Pry, the one thing that strikes me about the article is, with all three of you working on it, how short it is.
Well, there's a word limit when it comes to those. You can't exceed 850 words.
I was like, I bet you guys had to fight bitterly about that.
Well, we actually didn't have to. You know, we agree on we're so like-minded on these matters. Earlier in the show, in last hour, you had asked me what can people do.
Yes.
You know, I had suggested people writing and praising President Trump for the for his EMP Commission executive order that he wrote. But there's another thing people can do, because we don't have to. I've been hearing, you know, your advertisement for people to go out and buy generators and things of that sort, which they should do. You know, people shouldn't trust the federal government to be able to come to the rescue. We talked about the last hour about how President Trump's EMP executive order is being undermined by the deep state. You know, you can protect yourself, get a generator, have food, water, basically do the things. This kind of preparation is derided as survivalism today. But you know, my father's generation, the great generation that lived through the Great Depression and survived World War II, whether you were a Republican or a Democrat, if you came out of that generation, you would be what today we would call a survivalist.
Mm-hmm.
Where I grew up, you know, on a quarter acre in upstate New York, you know, my mother had a garden. She was constantly canning food. My father taught us how to hunt and fish, not just for recreation, because that's how he fed his family during the Great Depression. And they had never heard of EMP, but they were expecting that someday there might be a nuclear war, there might be another economic crisis, the federal government might screw up in some massive way again and bring on a Great Depression, but that every family had to be their own first line of defense. And that's not crazy. Those are traditional American values.
Yep.
That great generation, they were sort of the last of the pioneer stock that believed in rugged individualism and self-sufficiency, which is what made America great and possible. The Constitution, written by the founders, was written for people like that. You know, people that were jealous of their freedoms. and didn't want a handout from government, you know, that realized that government could actually threaten your security. And so you would be constantly watching government like a hawk, and at the same time being prepared yourself to take care of your family. And so I think those, what you are doing just by your advertisements on this show is a positive contribution, you know, to public safety. Another thing people could do, in addition to being able to take care of themselves, which would enable you also to take care of your neighbors, which is a Christian thing to do,
mm-hmm.
but another thing one could do, you know, my book Blackout Wars, okay, you know, is actually one of my more popular books. And that's available on Amazon.com. You don't have to protect the whole country. An individual state can protect itself if you're willing to do the right thing and harden the generators, harden the EHV transformers. If you're protected against a worst-case scenario like EMP, it'll also protect you against all the lesser threats like cyber warfare and EMP from the sun, non-nuclear EMP weapons, and severe weather, you know, like hurricanes, tornadoes, the high winds that you're having in California now. You'd be able to recover the grid much more quickly, and it would be much less susceptible to failure. Now, it's probably a bridge too far because your government in California, it may seem a bridge too far because the government in California is so left-wing and democratic, but, you know, California actually has passed some legislation, you know, that is pro-EMP preparedness. So there might be something to build on there. And the book describes how you can take legislative initiatives. It describes legislative initiatives at the state level that were advanced in most cases successfully, in some cases unsuccessfully. And it provides a series of case studies that people in California or other states, might be able to pursue in their state to not wait for the Washington to come to the rescue and protect the national grid, but at least get the grid in your state or your community protected. You can do that and be an island of survivability. You don't and shouldn't have to be dependent on Washington or Sacramento if the government in the state is unwilling to take action.
Well, you know, it's sad, but you see more and more people, as a society, I think we've become so dependent on someone else to take care of our needs. We aren't self-sufficient anymore. We don't know how to grow a garden. We don't know how to do a lot of these things that you were just talking about. And I think people really need to get back to that. I mean, we saw it with this blackout. The power goes out and everybody's in a big panic and they want to run out and buy a generator. Well, guess what? Nobody has a generator now because everybody's
sold.
They're all gone. They're all gone.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, whose fault is it? You know, I can't run my refrigerator. I can't. You know, you got to plan. You got to become a little more self-sufficient and stop depending on somebody else to take care of you.
And last night we actually learned that apparently in California they were replacing all the food stamps. So if you're thinking this isn't affecting you, like in the city of Reading, to give them credit, city of Reading is taking good care of their infrastructure and their power didn't go out. So if you were served by the city of Reading, Reading Electric Utility, you were good to go. And it was interesting. I noticed that we had so many, we have 90,000 people in our town. So it's big,
fairly small
it's
town.
Big for here, but it's small in the scope of things. And we had so much traffic. I thought, what is going on? Why do we have so many cars? And I always kind of laugh at myself because people, a lot of those people who grew up here and never lived in a city, they're like, look at all the traffic. I'm like, you should get out more.
Run down to LA and see traffic.
But there actually was a ton of traffic. So I think that people were coming in from the outlying areas who didn't have power, maybe staying with friends, that kind of thing. So it puts a tremendous strain on the town here. But honestly, you look at all of it and you've got a myriad of things that have hit everyone. People out of work for periods of time because the business they work for didn't have power. They are replacing all the food stamps. So if they went out, I was talking to a girl at the grocery store last night. She said if people spent their food stamps and then the power went out for a week, they replaced them again right after the power outage because they assumed they lost all that food. So in a lot of cases, people, you know, got double the food stamps. So regardless of how you feel about that whole issue,
you paid for it if you're a taxpayer. The gasoline for your car. Why do you wait until your car's on empty to go to the gas station?
And then the pumps are electric.
You can't get gas.
I've got to take a really quick break. We're going to come back and that's all the talking we'll do. We'll let Dr. Pry come back and run things for us. We figured a little AC/DC and some high voltage would make you feel happier this afternoon. We're back with our guest, Dr. Peter Pry. Okay, where should we go now? Besides the fact all the green stuff doesn't really work. Is there anything we've left out on that? Or it does work, but it's not going to solve our problem. How's that?
That's right. It can actually make our problems worse, the wind power and the solar power that they're talking about. No substitute for the big grid, although I am certainly not against, and there are technologies under development. The ideal thing, in my view, would be able to eventually replace the big grid. You're not going to be able to do that with wind, but there are technologies in train. I can't get into discussing them in detail because I've signed non-disclosure agreements. But imagine a technology. An electrical technology. Think of it as a super battery, so that you could actually run a car and never have to recharge it, or could go decades without having to recharge it, or a battery that would come with your house, and would be sold right along with your house, and it would provide all the electricity, so you'd never have to be tied into the big grid. That would be an ideal solution
to
a lot of the national security threats, cyber, EMP, that we're talking about. And it would also be a solution to the societal problem we've been discussing, I think, or at least a step in the right direction. You know, the pioneer stock we were talking about, they didn't have the big grid. They were self-sufficient. You know, they relied on the fuel, wood, you know, to heat their homes and do everything around. Families could be self-contained, you know, growing their own food. Something like that would start restoring, the society that we've lost, where you wouldn't have to be so dependent on a big corporation and on the regulatory agencies of big government. A comment that was made earlier was how people have lost the ability to be far-sighted. They don't think about making basic things like making sure you've got a full tank of gas, let alone being prepared for water shortages and food shortages.
Exactly.
We seem to have lost in a single generation those qualities that the great generation had of rugged individualism and self-sufficiency and foresight, forethought, thinking through, well, what do I really need? The idea that I might be... And people are getting an attitude increasingly that they want to be taken care of by the government. I find it so dismaying that so many young people, if these polls are telling the truth, so many young people embrace socialism and are followers of Bernie Sanders, and they want a socialist society. And they obviously have learned nothing from history, or even from current affairs. If you look at Venezuela, all socialist experiments have failed. There are myths out there, like Sweden is supposed to be a socialist country. It's not a socialist country. The Swedes would reject that. There's You know, but this goes beyond national security issues, and pertains to the kind of people we are, we used to be, and what we are becoming. And that's very disturbing. I don't think it's an accident that this appearance of these Republican, call it Republic with a small r, what the founders used to call Republican virtues, okay? That's what the Great Generation had. They had Republican virtues. You know, they were jealous of their freedoms. They were distrustful of government. They took a pride in being able to take care of themselves and their families. And with the disappearance of those Republican virtues, people are turning towards socialism and are willing to make the trade that Benjamin Franklin warned against. You know, tyranny always promises security. But those who are foolish enough to believe it, you know, and would trade their freedoms for security, they end up deserving neither. They end up deserving neither freedom or security, and they get neither in the end of the day. They get neither.
Mm-hmm. We have so many things that you know, you think about that one statement, a government big enough to give you everything, it's big enough to take it all away.
Yep. No, I can remember when, you know, you went out and got a good job. And if you couldn't get a job in the private sector, you could fall back on going to work for the government. But that really wasn't the answer. People didn't want to work for the government. Now it's absolutely reversed, where people want those government jobs because they're secure and they, you know, they're going to provide everything.
Well, and they didn't used to pay an industry standard,
right?
Either.
No.
And now they're actually paying over industry standard because,
yes,
you know, we have an unlimited checkbook. So,
yeah, go to work.
That's
for the
kind
government.
Of skewed things as well. But honestly, I don't know that people are realizing how much money, like in California, for instance, it's like $2.5 billion that's being spent on green energy, whatchamacallit, instead of maintenance of the PG&E lines. So when people start looking at this, they think, oh, well, we just need to get a better company to come in. Well, hello, we could get the greatest company in the universe to come in and take it over. But if they do, they've got the same infrastructure and they have the same requirements on their spending. There's a bill that's been co-authored by Assemblyman James Gallagher and Senator Jim Nielsen in the California legislature to set aside the green mandate and let PG&E use their money to work on the grid to get this up and running and to deal with their tree trimming. And I know Congressman LaMalfa has actually had to write a bill to say that it shouldn't take 6 years to be able to trim trees underneath power lines. So it's sped up that process. So somehow we've had to, you know, we're passing all this legislation to do things that I think most people would, I mean, they think that it can be done now, and it can.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people have realized that the government has actually tied the hands in some ways of PG&E to spend their money on this crazy stuff.
And before we
stuff.
Throw the word government around too much, I mean, a lot of that was done by people that citizens of California elected.
Yes.
So, you know, might want to check out who you're voting for when it comes time for that, because a lot of those folks were into that plan, and you have nobody to blame but the folks you elected.
And I'm not saying PG&E wasn't at fault.
No.
I mean, they've done a terrible job of maintaining their side of the deal, but they do at this point. We better do something to get it back up and running and in good shape, or this is going to be kind of a glimpse of things to come in the future, and it's going to get worse. So.
Right. Basically, what you've got in California now, where the grid is concerned, is socialism. And the government and PG&E can share the blame equally. I know that your Governor Newsom was trying to blame PG&E exclusively.
Yeah,
which was just rich.
In our article, and shift the blame onto him. But this is not true. It isn't all PG&E's fault. It's at least half government's fault, and not just in California either, but federal government's fault as
mm-hmm.
well. You know, years ago, there was a report delivered to the California Public Utilities Commission warning about these very problems, and the Democrats have been in charge all this time. They didn't do anything. They didn't do anything to require PG&E through the regulatory process to protect itself. And up in Washington, the U.S. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and the NERC, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, who are supposed to partner, NERC is private, the U.S. FERC is the federal government, they're supposed to private on national grid security, including the grid security in California. All this stuff has happened on their watch, under their noses. You know, so, you know, this is socialism in action when it comes to the electric grid, mm-hmm. where these guys have not been, you know, the combination of corporate interests and government interests have conspired to create a disaster, which is unfolding in front of our eyes in California. And, you know, and this is, you know, why these guys can't be trusted to protect us against more. And these institutional arrangements have to be changed if we expect to be secure against bigger threats like EMP and cyber warfare.
Well, see, and up here at the northern end of the state and at the southern end of Oregon, there are four hydroelectric dams that they are just salivating to remove. It provides electricity for some 77,000 homes, maybe, but it's a huge hedge against flood. Provides some not gigantic, but reservoirs that provide water for firefighting. There are all sorts of things that go on when we have dammed up these rivers, and they talk about just the miles and miles of river that the fish would get, although the fish were not up there years ago. So they have this back to nature philosophy where they convince everybody we're doing restoration. Well, restoration would mean we go back to where we were, but that river never was like what they think it's going to be like now. And they're planning on leaving all the cement from the dams in the river, which I'm not sure exactly how they get away with that. But there goes more hydroelectric. And they're coming after the bigger and bigger and bigger dams. There's a gigantic movement in this country to take out dams, and most specifically hydro dams, which will just cripple us. It's crazy.
Yeah, that'll be an enormous mistake. They're the single most resilient part of our electric grid against all the threats we've been discussing, and they provide an enormous amount of our electricity.
People here are so aware of that. The county north of us, they all made buttons that says, "I'm a dam hugger." So if you go up there, you know, you see buttons and bumper stickers that say, "I'm a dam hugger." And I'm sure people who drive through are thinking, "What?" But maybe that'll catch on because hydro is so much better than so many of these other things. And yet, interestingly, in California, PG&E isn't allowed to count the Shasta Dam, which is enormous, and I can't give you all the numbers because it's just not my deal. But it's a huge dam, provides lots of hydropower, but not to its capacity by any stretch, and is not considered part of the PG&E green portfolio because Southern California Edison doesn't have any hydro, so that wouldn't be fair. So they're not allowed to count it. They have to spend a bunch of money on solar and wind credits to offset the hydro that they're
using. Again, mandating them to spend money on green energy when they have.
Yeah. So before people think it's one thing, it's more than one thing. I hate to say it. So really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Dr. Peter Pry. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Turn up
old Billy Joel song, and I hadn't heard in a long time. And the rest of the song, it's called Seeing the Lights Go Down on Broadway. And the rest of the song talks about how, you know, Harlem catches on fire, but it's always on fire, so it's no big deal. Nothing's really changed. But it kind of goes through a lot of our cities and our landmarks, and I thought, wow. I guess, Dr. Pry, if you want to make your next report a musical, you should get a hold of Billy Joel. He can make that happen for you.
I doubt I could afford it.
You could just be like us. You could just play it on the radio, and then you can play whatever you want for free. So, in the last half hour, what are we missing here? Are we leaving anything out? What about the whole cyber warfare thing? We haven't really talked about that. And I know we've got Professor Ayers on next week.
Yes. And
thanks to you.
She and I may disagree a little bit on this. We've discussed it a lot. There's a strange phenomena here where it seems like everybody knows about the cyber threat to the grid, and people talk about that, and the government takes it a lot more seriously than the EMP threat, and that is completely wrong-headed, you know? The cyber threat is a lot more theoretical than the EMP threat. EMP is often accused of being a theoretical Rube Goldberg kind of a threat, which is amazing, you know, because we know it's real. I mean, not only have we produced the phenomena, but we know the Russians conducted a series of high-altitude tests. In fact, they did an EMP tests over their own territory. Soviet Union was truly the evil empire. They exposed Kazakhstan in the early 60s was a heavily industrialized area. And they deliberately, they conducted a series of about five high-altitude EMP tests and wired up the whole area with sensors and stuff and literally burned down and then rebuilt their electric grid and other critical infrastructures in part of the Soviet Union, which was Kazakhstan, now an independent country, so that they could test the EMP phenomena and use it in war. And, you know, that would be like setting off a bomb over... You know,
be like the song several
U.S. states, just the Department of Defense doing that to take down all the critical infrastructures and then rebuilding them and doing it five times, you know, to get intelligence on how effective this thing would be in wartime. And so it's been clearly demonstrated. You know, I mean, we've seen them, the area, the EMP field, the Soviets imposed on themselves covered an area larger than Western Europe, and it collapsed electric grids and the other critical infrastructures over that huge area. Now, it's a sparsely inhabited area. It doesn't have that many people living in it, you know, a few million people, but still, that's kind of extreme, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
right. The kind of thing you would expect Nazi Germany to do. And the Soviet Union was no better, let's face it. But, yeah, so, and that's just one example. We also know that the EMP from the sun, I mean, it burns out, you know, solar storms happen every year. We know the Carrington event was real. It's not the only time there was a big geomagnetic superstorm. Fortunately, we haven't had one during the period of our electronic civilization. But we know these things will burn down and melt. There was a solar storm in 1989 called the Hydro-Quebec storm. It affected in Canada and affected the northeastern United States. This was not the Carrington event. This isn't the end of the world kind of superstorm we're concerned about, which could happen. But this storm, for example, fried a extra high voltage transformer, an EHV transformer designed to carry 750,000 volts. Okay. 750,000 volts, if you can imagine that, and it melted it in 90 seconds. And this was not a Carrington event class geomagnetic superstorm. So the threat is not theoretical. It's here. There's all kinds of empirical evidence to support it. And yet people are more worried about the cyber threat. You know, we've the United States has never experienced a blackout, a nationwide blackout resulting from cyber. We've never had a single state knocked out by cyber. Only Ukraine has been blacked out for temporarily by Russian cyber attacks. It's possible that Turkey might have experienced a temporary blackout from Iran, and they might have been the first country to experience a cyber attack. But it isn't demonstrated. It hasn't been proven. It's theoretically possible through cyber to melt transformers and do things that would create a protracted, permanent blackout that could kill millions of people. But that's just theoretical. It hasn't actually been proven or demonstrated yet. Which is not to say that we don't need to take the cyber attack threat seriously.
Sure.
We should. As we speak, somebody could be building the atomic bomb version of a cyber virus, you know, that could do all those things, just like an EMP could. But in any case, we know the EMP threat is real, for sure. And if we're protected against that, you know, it'll also protect against the cyber and things like physical sabotage, you know, because you can also take a grid down. You don't need high-tech cyber or even EMP to inflict the kind of disaster we've been discussing. You know, there was according to the Wall Street Journal, I have to say that, according to the Wall Street Journal, there was a classified study by the U.S. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that demonstrated that if you attacked, knew which 9 EHV transformers to attack and took them out with rifle fire, you know, you could inflict a protracted blackout on the United States that would last at least 18 months, black out the whole grid. And that would kill millions of people. So that's something that is also a real thing, very doable, and yet these guys don't want to do anything. You had a great case in California, as a matter of fact, back in 2013, as I recall. In fact, it was April 16th, 2013, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure of that, that it was the attack on the Metcalf Transformer Substation near San Jose, California.
Oh, that's where they shot holes in it or something?
Yeah, exactly. The electric utility, PG&E, covered that up for about 18 months and wanted to try to say, oh, it was just vandalism and nothing really happened. And that moved on one of the few occasions that the U.S. FERC did anything useful. There was a guy named John Wellinghoff, who was the chairman of the U.S. FERC, and his conscience got the better of him. you know, a rare case of somebody's conscience bothering them, and he actually resigned from his chairmanship so that he could go to the Wall Street Journal and break the story that actually this was not vandalism, but that the FERC had brought in the U.S. Navy SEALs to examine the attack, and the SEALs had judged that this was a commando exercise by a hostile foreign power to see how much they could get away with. You know, could they insert or use moles who are already in place in the United States to go in and attack that grid? They deliberately, in the judgment of the SEALs, they could have taken down that grid and put California into blackout, but they didn't want to go that far because that's not what you should do in an exercise, you know, because that would alarm your enemy and expose a vulnerability that he might then repair.
Sure. We might get our act
together. waited literally till the cops were there, you know, minutes within the time when the cops got there, and within minutes of the cops arriving, they just disappeared into the night. And to this day, you know, it's 3 years later, you know, we still don't know who did that. But an interesting coincidence was that on that very day, North Korea orbited its first satellite, the KMS-3, you know, over the Washington, D.C., New York City corridor. And the commission warns that, the EMP commission has warned that those satellites could be armed for a nuclear EMP attack. We've got 2 North Korean satellites orbiting over us now that potentially could be nuclear armed for an EMP attack. And this would fit right into this new way of warfare that the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, and the North Koreans all write about, where you use multiple axes to attack the grid. EMP, cyber, and physical sabotage. So it's just an amazing coincidence that on the same day that the KMS-3 orbited over Washington, over the eastern grid, basically, the country's divided into 3 big grids, the eastern grid, the western grid, and the Texas grid. So you had a simulated EMP attack over the eastern grid, and that very day there was a sabotage threat you know, to the Western grid. And, you know, it looked like maybe the North, and we were happened to be in one of the worst, up to that point, it was the, one of the worst nuclear crises we were facing with the North Koreans. They had conducted another illegal nuclear test earlier in the year, and that created a crisis that was still ongoing at the time with the Obama administration.
Well, I'm sure it was just a coincidence, huh?
Right. I have to add this, too, April 16th. That very day that satellite passed over Washington, you know, Obama was telling the New York Times not to worry about North Korea, that they didn't have the means to deliver nuclear weapons against the United States yet.
Oh, my God. Huh. Well, let's mull that over for 2 minutes. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Pry. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
When the lights go out and you throw yourself about in the darkness where you learn to see. When the lights go out, don't you ever doubt the light that we can really be. When the lights go out, when the lights go out.
Okay, I'm just thinking you don't want to be in the city by the bay when the lights go out. It's a great song, and it was really appropriate, but the more I listened, the more I thought, what the hell were they thinking when they did?
Because that sounds like chaos to me.
Sounds like San Francisco's a bad day on a sunny day, but yeah, let's have all the lights go out and run to San Francisco. That's what I, yeah, it's on my list of things to do. All right. So, interesting on the North Koreans and all the coincidences that were happening on that day.
So we're pretty certain that North Korea has the technology to deploy an EMP over the United States.
Oh yes, yeah, that's the assessment of the EMP Commission. You know, you don't need a fancy weapon. Any nuclear weapon will create an EMP because they all have fireballs, and they all put out gamma rays, you know, which is what causes the EMP effect. Mm-hmm. In fact, the illustration, and it's the easiest kind of a nuclear attack to make, you know, because you don't have to be precise. You don't need a reentry vehicle that can penetrate, that has to penetrate the atmosphere. The EMP effect is so big that you can be hundreds of kilometers off target and still hit whatever it is you want.
Right.
I think a great illustration of how easy EMP is to do was the 1962 Starfish Prime high altitude test. We call it a test. You know, we didn't know about the high altitude EMP phenomenon until that experiment happened. And that was because we saw the Russians doing all these high altitude tests. We didn't know why. And this was just at the end of the atmospheric testing. You know, it was one of our last opportunities to do testing outside of the ground. You know, the underground testing, and they basically didn't really know what was going to happen, and yet they still generated a powerful EMP, even though they just shot the thing up there a couple hundred kilometers and detonated it. It wasn't a bomb that was specially designed for EMP or anything. And the field was so big, you know, it stretched out. The detonation happened over Johnston Island, the Pacific, and the field was, you know, well over 1,000 kilometers and affected the Hawaiian Islands, you know, that were on the far edge of the field. You know, sometimes the optimists, the people that don't want to do anything about EMP, say, well, yeah, civilization wasn't destroyed in the Hawaiian Islands, so, you know, why should we worry about EMP? Well, you know, the Hawaiian Islands are islands, and they're surrounded by the ocean, which tends to mitigate the EMP effects. They were also in the far edge of the detonation where the EMP effects are weakest. And the technology of the time, you know, the early 1960s, you know, transistor and vacuum tube technologies are millions of times less vulnerable to EMP than our modern technologies, which we can test. The EMP Commission was the last organization that did a comprehensive testing regime, and we proved that, you know, our modern micro technologies, which have made our country more prosperous, and they operate faster, and they're more efficiently, and they make possible all kinds of technological miracles, are millions of times more vulnerable. It takes a lot less to knock out our society with EMP than it would have back in the 1960s. Had you detonated that same weapon that went off over Johnston Island, however, and detonated over the continental United States, it would have, despite the lower technology society we had at that time, it would have killed millions of people and put us into a protracted blackout, even with vacuum tube technologies and transistors and the like.
Right.
So this is a concern, as we bureaucrats in Washington say.
Yeah, I would think that that would be the preferred mode of attack in today's society. I mean, if you really wanted to shut down a country,
exactly,
go for an EMP.
It makes you the equal. It makes you the strategic equal of the United States because you can pose an existential threat to us with one weapon. And the bad news story actually gets worse because we also assessed, the EMP Commission assessed, that North Korea probably does have super EMP weapons. There are weapons that are specially designed just to generate EMP. They're tuned to put out gamma rays. They don't put out a big explosion. They don't put out a lot of other kinds of effects, but they put out a lot of gamma rays. And with a very low-yield gamma ray weapon, you can generate a really big EMP.
Much bigger than
the high-yield weapons. You know, for example, with a nuclear weapon of conventional design, you know, a big hydrogen bomb, you know, the biggest field you'll get would be about 50,000 volts per meter. In other words, for every meter of length on the target, you can generate 50,000 volts. So if you drive in an automobile that's, say, 4 meters long, it gets hit with 200,000 volts, 4 times 50,000 at the speed of light. But a super EMP weapon can generate 100,000, maybe 200,000 volts per meter. You know, and so 4 times greater. And the yield of the weapon can be really tiny. You know, it might be a kiloton or even less. And so that same automobile, you know, at 100,000 volts per meter, you know, would be exposed to 400,000 volts at the speed of light. And that's such a powerful field that it exceeds the EMP hardening requirements for our U.S. military forces.
Oh, terrific.
So conceivably you could paralyze ICBMs and bombers, and people say, well, we would retaliate, wouldn't we? Well, we might not be able to retaliate because it would paralyze the retaliatory nuclear forces and the command and control systems that are designed to execute them. And you might not even know who attacked you, by the way. I mean, that's one of the other things about a satellite or a boat-launched EMP attack. You know, the first thing to go are the national technical means, the radars, the satellites that we depend upon for threat assessment to tell us, well, who attacked us? They're blinded at the speed of light, you know, so it's perfect for false flag attacks. And a president is going to have to wonder, well, wait a minute, who attacked me? I mean, there's hundreds of satellites in the same kind of orbital pathways as those North Korean satellites. How do we know it wasn't the Iranians pulling a false flag operation to try to get us to attack North Korea and start a nuclear war, you know? Or how do we know it wasn't the Chinese trying to get us to, you know, or the Iranians trying to get us into a war with Russia, the other great infidel? I mean, it would be perfect from the Iranian perspective to have the nuclear superpowers hammer on each other and eliminate themselves to clear the way for the 12th Imam.
So would it take a smaller delivery vehicle to drop one of those super EMP devices?
Yeah, these North Korean satellites are really small, you know, but they could contain one of these super EMP weapons. They weigh less than 100 pounds.
Oh.
They resemble the design is, I can't get into too much technical detail here, but you know, back in the Cold War, we built a warhead called the neutron bomb. It was a neutron warhead, and we built variants of that that were designed to be fired out of 155 millimeter artillery cannons. Okay, so it can fit in a 155 millimeter artillery tube, the physics package. And it was designed to put out neutron radiation, you know, to kill Soviet tank crews.
Right.
But it's basically what we called its official name was the Enhanced Radiation Weapon. And the reason it's called an Enhanced Radiation Weapon is that it created all kinds of enhanced radiation, not just neutrons. It also created enhanced gamma radiation, which is what you need for EMP.
And you could go right in and reoccupy after a neutron attack, right?
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever have a chance, I think it's in New Mexico, where they have, Sandia is in New Mexico, as I'm not mistaken, Sandia National Lab. Outside of Sandia, there's a thing called the Atomic Museum. And you can go in there, and they have displays of the, you know, mock-ups, and in some cases, the actual atomic weapons, you know, from across history, except they don't have the physics packages in it anymore.
Right.
In some cases, they've replaced that with weight, you know. And in the case of this 155-millimeter artillery shell I'm talking about, you can actually see one of them at the Atomic Museum, and you can pick it up and hold it in your hand to get an idea of the heft.
Wow.
Yeah. So, these things are small. They could be delivered by anything, really. You know, you can use a weather balloon to get up above 30 kilometers and do an EMP attack that way. You could launch it off a Scud missile off a ship if you wanted to increase the deniability so that we wouldn't be able to figure out who attacked us. A satellite, I already mentioned that. The great thing about a satellite is that you can have that altitude all the time. I mean, basically, several times a day, you know, this thing passes overhead.
Sure.
And it's sort of like, remember the old gunboat diplomacy from the 19th century? You know, when you could get what you want just by putting a battleship off of somebody's shore?
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a situation that North Korea might have us in. You know, we've urged, I'm hoping President Trump will shoot those things down someday. You know, we've recommended that as part of
I think we're all going to look at all of this in a different way, and hopefully Professor Ayers just builds on this with us next week. We've got to run. We're in the last, 9 seconds. Thank you so much, Dr. Pry, for being with us, and we look forward to speaking with you again.
Well, thank you for having me, and give my regards to Cindy when she's on next week.
Will do. Thanks a million. You've been listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.